The Real Estate Revolution is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice. Please consult your trusted financial advisor, real estate professional, or attorney before making any real estate or financial decisions. Please remember, when following advice, your results may vary. And all information covered here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the hosts and guests consider important.
With the latest in real estate news, you can learn all the facts that will keep you on track and use them any way you choose.
And now it's time for a power hour from America's trusted resource for everything real estate. Everything in the real estate industry is in a constant movement of change. It's a real estate revolution with your host, Victoria Riva De Nera, and her co-host, Scott Forsino. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution.
Good evening and happy Monday. I'm Victoria Riva De Nera, president of the Northeast Division for Exit Realty Corp International, and I've been in the real estate business for about 25 years. I'm also a New York State licensed real estate broker and a member of the National Association of Realtors, as well as many other industry associations. And I am here in the WFAS studio, a.k.a. the Man Cave, with my co-host, Scott Forsino. How you doing today,
Great.
Scott?
Great. Good evening. I'm happy to be here. We have...
What's our topic today?
Well, we don't have death, but we have taxes, the only two certainties in life, and these are the property taxes. I know their audience is going to be really excited to hear why they exist, why they must be paid, in what order, the consequences for failure, how to reduce them, and how they are treated at closing. So I'm going to introduce John Noto. John was a partner in a family of real estate valuation consultant firm for over 20 years. He was a director of real property tax services in Rockland County for 9 years, and during his time as a director, he advised, trained, and counseled assessors, local government officials, school district officials in all areas of property tax. Annually, John trained the boards of assessment review for each of Rockland's five towns, and he served in several statewide committees discussing various aspects of the real property tax system in New York. He's an expert, and he's a graduate of St. Thomas Aquinas College, receiving a BS in finance. And that's not BS. That's true. So, well, a big topic is taxes here, and we're sitting in Westchester, and Victoria reminded me that this is the seat of the highest property taxes in America. I'm the only resident.
Westchester County is the highest taxes across the country. In fact, there was a house that recently went on the market in Purchase, New York. You probably know about this. And the taxes were $117,000.
I'm not surprised. Purchase is amongst the highest, and so is Bronxville. There are over six figures in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Now, they're not all like that, but, you know, we do average about five times more than everywhere else. And I was telling this to John earlier, and he said that $117,000 is not the highest he's ever heard in Westchester County.
That's correct. On the waterfront, it could be double that, depending on the size of the property.
Wow. That's really crazy. But, like I said, it's not... They're not all like that, right? So what brings our taxes so high in Westchester County? Is it school system, value of homes?
Compilation of a whole number of forces. You have school districts that have tremendous budgets. You have police departments. And you've had, a large government that consumes a lot of your tax dollars.
And you said Rockland is the second.
Rockland is number two, and between the two, we have the dubious distinction of paying more property tax than Beverly Hills, California.
Wow.
Now, would you say that that's due in some part to those who are the closest to New York City, Westchester, and then Rockland?
Well, that's part of it. I mean, we have a tremendous amount of value in our real estate here, but, you know, again, your property taxes, what we're going to talk about is how they come about, and when a municipality takes their budget and they establish a budget, they find out where all the sources of revenue is going to come in to the municipality. And if the budget's $10 million and they expect to get $8 million in revenue from all other sources, and they're left with $2 million that they need to recoup, that falls upon your property tax base. And that's where it comes from. So, you know, that depending on what the budget is and what the estimated revenues are, will dictate what your property tax levy is going to be. And then based on your value of your home, because it's an ad valorem tax, that's really...
What does ad valorem mean?
According to value. So it's considered a fair and equitable tax because people are taxed according to the value of the home. So if your home is $200,000, you pay X, and if you're $400,000, theoretically, you should be 2x X.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I have a bunch of questions, but Victoria, you had
I have some fun facts that you just jumped right over because I know you love them so much.
Right, let's
but you
go.
Mentioned New York City, and rumor has it that Madison Square Garden in New York City has not paid property taxes since 1982. Are you aware of that, Scott?
Not at all. Is that the the most famous arena in all of
it? It is the most famous arena in sports. Oh, I consider it a music arena.
Right, right.
Because I gravitate toward music.
And how many times
has
Billy Joel played there?
Yes, many, many, many times.
About 65.
Yes, many times.
Sold out 21 shows in a row right now.
Yeah, and he's and my brother actually graduated the police academy in Madison Square Garden. For people that don't know that,
very nice. And they have not paid their taxes since 1982. Do you know why?
Refusal? No.
Because there was a 10-year tax abatement that was inadvertently made perpetual due to a clerical error.
Nice.
Can
happy
you imagine?
That they took advantage of that.
Yeah. So that has already cost New York City and has saved Madison Square Garden about $300 million. So this is rumor. I don't have a real source to that. John, are you aware of any of this?
Just talking before and knowing that to correct that, they have a resolution. The city council has passed the resolution to send the correction up to Albany, and it's up to the Albany lawmakers to remove that exemption to, you know, start forcing them to pay their fair share.
And how come they haven't done that since 1982?
That is a very good question, and one for the city council.
Well, they're relying on the codicil within that agreement, and that sounds like a lawsuit to me. Well, why would something that they agree to in principle have any legislature be able to touch that?
Mm-hmm.
But stay tuned for that filing of an index number.
All right. Well, we'll pick that up another time, right? All right, so let's talk about property tax. So what is it? Let's really dive in. What is it? What is it used for?
Well, property tax is used for local... Property tax, first of all, is a local tax, and it's to be used for local purposes. So a school is a tax-levying body, and they issue a tax to pay for school purposes. The state, everybody says state and county tax. The state has nothing to do with property tax. They don't collect it. They don't receive it. For county purposes, it can be used for the sewer districts, the lighting districts, the ambulance, the fire, water districts, and general municipal, you know, administration of your county or your town. That's what it's there for. And it's the reason we have it is because it's the most consistent base that a government can draw from, where income tax can go up and down, and, you know, the gas tax that's in gasoline can go up and down depending on use. Property tax is always consistent. We know what our property tax base is, our assessment base. So the government always is assured that if they need to get that extra $2 million that we were talking about before, they know they're going to be able to get it from the property tax base.
Now, you said that they're consistent, but the assessments themselves are not consistent, and they are often very different than the current market value of a home. So how do they determine that, and why are they so different?
Within each municipality, the assessor's job is to go out and put a value on each property. So when they do that, they have to evaluate the whole municipality one time. It's called a reval. And when they do the reval, they come up with a value for an individual property, and that assessment is static in time. So, for example, in Rockland County in Clarkstown, the last reval was done in 1985. So all the assessments are from 1985, and what they do is to equalize that, to bring it up to market value. They have a ratio, and they divide that ratio by the assessment to come up with what they feel market value is. And it, you know, when our assessments in Westchester specifically has had, you know, municipalities that haven't had a reval in 50 years, and their assessments are really indefensible. So the equalization rates that they come up with are usually not defendable. The state comes up with an equalization rate by the sales. They compare the sales, the current sales, and divide it by what the equals by what the equalization rate is, and they come up with a value.
Is that why we have an equalization assessment form, the ENA, at transactions?
Yes, exactly right. That is specifically what goes up in the equalization and assessment division up in Albany, looks at those for each different type of class of property, and that is how the equalization rate comes up.
Hmm.
Exactly right.
Okay, well, I mean, the consumer's, I guess, biggest opportunity to be involved with real property tax, I guess, through their monthly payment at their mortgage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you come across people who've, I guess, either have paid their own escrows or if it's not part of a loan, I mean, what happens in that case? If let's say, they're in a foreclosure and they're not paying their mortgage and therefore not making any payments, what happens to the taxes if no payments are being made?
If no payments are being made, you'll continually get reminders and delinquent notices from the municipality. In Westchester, it's a little bit different. Each municipality collects their own taxes. In Rockland County, and most counties throughout New York, the county is going to be the collecting entity, the lien enforcing entity. So in Westchester, it's a municipality. And typically, the law is 24 months of delinquent taxes will start what is called the in-rem proceeding, which is a foreclosure proceeding for real property tax.
And that's a separate type of foreclosure just for tax payments purposes?
Right, because the property tax is what's considered a priority lien. So it comes before.
So that gets paid first?
That gets paid first.
Huh, so that's superior to that of your bank loan from, let's say, Wells Fargo.
That's correct. The bank will be also notified of the delinquency in the property tax payment so that they have the opportunity to satisfy the lien. And in effect, what they'll do is they'll not allow that non-escrow loan to be non-escrow any longer, and they'll escrow it to make sure that their loan is protected.
Or pay it.
Typically they will pay it, right.
Yeah, right. They'll have to pay it to protect their interest in the property.
I mean, this, I guess, you know, we're touching on the good and the normal, and that's the bad side of the tax situation. Can we touch on people, another aspect that I think people are interested in is the program, the Enhanced Star. I don't know the age for those people who qualify for Enhanced.
Right. Or any type of exemption.
Any type of exemption, I guess, veterans.
And so how do they qualify, right?
Well, there's several. The exemption code is hundreds and hundreds of pages thick, and there's several different types of exemption. The STAR is the School Tax Relief Act, and there's different levels of that. The basic STAR, everybody's entitled to unless you make over a certain number, and I think that's $500,000.
And it has to be on your primary residence.
Exactly right. And if you have a secondary residence and you claim it in both places, that's a felony. It's a penalty.
It's fraud.
Yeah, exactly right. So, mm-hmm. And there's, you know, a monetary penalty as well, punitive.
Mm-hmm.
So the senior exemption is for people of a certain age that hit a certain income requirement. And it's a big reduction and worth looking into. All exemptions have to be filed by March 1st. And that's where a lot of people...
Is that only in New York or everywhere?
It's in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, in New York, we're talking about New York.
So every state has
tax.
A different.
That's exactly
okay.
Right. Yeah, and so especially with seniors, we always try to remind them that in February to make sure that they have their exemption forms in, so they don't miss it. Because if they miss it, they're paying the full freight of the tax.
And for how long is that full freight? As you say, is it a yearly? I mean, will it stay that way forever, or if they miss it? How long does that relief last?
The basic STAR is going to stay on the property until ownership changes. The senior exemption, the senior STAR, is an annual exemption that has to be filed every year.
That's a good point.
If the senior passes away or moves, then that exemption has to be removed for the ensuing owner.
Yeah. I bet a lot of people don't know that.
I knew that, but you know who don't know that? And I say don't in plural, realtors don't know that because they'll list a property as an estate, the person is deceased, and of course that's not the correct.
Right, they're using the wrong tax.
Right,
yeah.
It can't
mm-hmm.
be right. And then you have a greater interest. Oh, look at that property with lower taxes. Well, it's not accurate, and that's why at a by the closing or in preparation of a closing, they get the accurate, they do a continuation search, and then someone is, you know, walloped with this higher tax bill, and for no fault of their own, they didn't know that.
Right.
So that's interesting. And,
all right, so let's talk about the actual assessment. So there's a lot of people that really want to know, how do I appeal this assessment? I think I'm...
You mean the grievance process.
Yeah, the grievance process. How do you go about doing that?
Okay, so the there's a procedure to follow. And the first one, believe it or not, is to actually have a conversation with your assessor. And you look at it and you say, Mr. or Mrs. Assessor, I feel I'm overassessed and here's my case. And typically, the assessor is going to say, my number's right.
Mm-hmm.
File a grievance.
Well, what would that individual's quote-unquote case be based on? An appraisal? Do they pay for an appraisal?
It can be. It can be based on a sales price.
Well, we saw a lot of that when the market dropped.
Certainly. And the towns were hurting because they lost a lot of tax revenue because of the reduction in value. But so, you know, around here I know a lot of lawyers do it. So do you, no offense to lawyers that may be listening, do you need a lawyer for this?
Absolutely not.
Really?
You only need a lawyer... In two circumstances.
When do you ever need a lawyer?
Well, I know that. Is there some form of hearing?
There's the Board of Assessment Review. They mm-hmm. hear every case. And whether it's a single family home, one, two or three family home, or other types of properties, all other types of properties fall under a different set of rules. But the second process is to file your grievance with the Board of Assessment Review. And if you are denied, then there's two avenues you can go. One is if you're looking for a reduction under 25% of a reduction of assessment, you file what's called a small claims assessment review. And that is an informal hearing with a review officer and the assessor. No lawyers are needed. And it's set up that way because of the two major components to your property taxes, the assessor and the homeowner, the property owner. And the assessor's job is to put the value on the property, and the homeowner's or the property owner's job is to make sure that it's correct.
To bring it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's to make sure it's correct.
Right. Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a break. Hold that thought. If you'd like to join in on the conversation when we return, please give us a call back at call us at 914-693-5700. You can tell it's Monday for me. 914-693-5700.
Have you ever been disappointed because something important you planned went wrong at the last moment? Doesn't that make you really frustrated? That won't happen at Movement Mortgage, where your entire loan process is designed to remove the stress and hassles from getting your loan approved quickly. Movement Mortgage is an Inc. 500 fastest growing company in 42 states, including this area, working hard for you. How? At Movement Mortgage, your loan is processed in 7 days, and we underwrite in the first 48 hours. We expedite your loan and update you continually. When buying your first home, upgrading, downsizing, or even refinancing, call your Movement Mortgage team today. The movement of change is here for you with Movement Mortgage. Call Movement Mortgage at 1-800-516-2119. That's 1-800-516-2119. Movement Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS ID 39179.
The movement of change is here. Movement Mortgage.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138, or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
And we're back. We're here in the studio of WFAS. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, we're talking about property tax with John Noto. And our number here is 914-693-5700. And Scott, you were talking about...
Yeah, I mean, John was very eloquent in explaining what I think is maybe an ideal way for those that are capable in handling this mini hearing, but for those that are completely unfamiliar with any kind of court proceeding or anyone with suits on, they may even be intimidated and say, look, an attorney or a service that provides that type of effort, it's easy. They don't pay them, as far as I know. They're very familiar. They're in that type of scenario almost every day. They may be on a first name basis. It's just something I think for consumers to consider, because I'm pretty sure the cost is only present if that person or that service is successful. So to get just all sides of it, I mean, it's great if you can. And shout out to my sister-in-law Lucy, that I think did it and now was successful, but not everyone is as resolute as she is in getting it done. So it's a nice, I guess, exercise to outsource. We were moving towards one of the topics.
Well, what do you think about that, John? Do you think that they should?
Well, I always, when I was the director, I always had people come in asking, and I would walk them through the process, because it was a very important piece of the puzzle, is to have the property owner do that, just to verify that they're being treated properly or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when they looked at it, when I'd walk them through it, they'd say, hey, that's pretty easy. The form is pretty straightforward. Especially if they have a recent sale or something, that's proof positive. So, you know, the threshold is the assessor's right unless you can prove them wrong.
Okay, so what's to be used? An appraisal or comps? I mean, is that what you
appraisal is good, but not specifically required. Some people will tell you that an appraisal can be, you know, made to prove a case.
Mm-hmm.
But the market data that's out there, you can attach comparable sales from MLS, a multiple listing system.
How would an individual get that?
MLS? Well, if they would have to talk to a broker.
Right. So that's kind of like a broker price opinion?
Yes.
Similar to that?
Yeah. Similar to that.
BPO?
Looking in through the assessor's records, which gets a little bit more complicated. And that's usually where people stop and they go to your service.
Because I don't want all these numbers.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with this. But there is merit in trying to do it yourself.
Huh. Is there any kind of, like, what if you try and fail? Are you stuck with that result? Could you then kind of hire a service?
No, your second choice is to file that small claims assessment review, which, again, is a pretty straightforward
form. Instead, if it's under $25,000?
Yeah, under 25%. In other words, the maximum reduction you can get is 25%.
And what if you seek more than 25%?
Then you would go towards what's called an Article 7 or a civil action.
Special proceeding?
Specifically for assessments.
Got it.
But you also have a time frame that you have to do this
within.
Yes, right?
You have to. You file in most towns throughout New York, and you have to check with your individual municipality. The fourth Tuesday in May is when you file. By July 1st, you should have your answer, and you need to have your SCAR petition, your small claim assessment review petition, filed at that time.
So now let's say I'm a homeowner and I go ahead and I do this myself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm denied, and it's July 1st. Can I now hire a service, or I have to wait until the next year?
At that point, you could, but it's going to be harder to pick up a service at that point to do it, because they've typically, the ones I've seen, do hundreds and hundreds, and they do it from the front end all the way through.
Okay.
So at that point, sometimes appraisers will do that. When we had the appraisal business, we filed several just based on the appraisal fee, and we would fill out the form because it was that easy to do,
mm-hmm.
and we would submit it in with the you know, the comparable sales.
Right, you knew exactly what you were doing, and
right.
you had
and,
the whole process.
And at that
involved.
Point, we also were able to tell a homeowner, look, you have a clear-cut case, and you know, we'll file this for you, and we would charge just a flat fee, and if you didn't, we would be able to explain to you why, you know, you're either fairly assessed or you're
unfairly assessed.
Yeah, or you have a benefit of being mm-hmm. under-assessed, so to speak.
Under-assessed
sure.
is even better. Mm-hmm. All right.
at closings, at transactions, I've experienced title company, I mean, would you title company taking the taxes and even more if they were yet unknown? Would you describe that process and why is the title company even involved in taking taxes sometime in the near future once a closing occurs? Why are they involved and what's the maximum of, let's say, if a school tax was $1,000 in the last lien year, what could possibly happen from there?
Well, that's regulated by the RESPA Act, and they're allowed to, by law, keep 17.5% as a buffer of taxes. So, you know, at any time when they make a disbursement of your school tax or a disbursement of your town and county tax, they have this, you know, up to 17.5% buffer in case the taxes have had an increase. So they're always protected that the taxes are you know, satisfied. So you're not falling into that delinquency or with the title company having to foot, you know, pay the bill and be short, because you cannot partial pay a tax. Otherwise,
right,
they'll kick it back to you, and you'll get hit with interest and penalties, and they're significant.
And what if it's, you know, 10% more? And what happens to the 7.5%?
Well, it's up to 17.5%. So they could, if their requirement is 10%, that's as a buffer, that's fine. But they just can't exceed the 17.5%.
People don't know, and I've told clients I've been around transactions, that there's really three treatments of taxes at a closing. One is if there's escrows, of course. Two is if the taxes come up with what's in ballpark number 60 days in the future. If they pick up, so to speak, I should say collect the sums for the next upcoming taxes. And the third, which people don't know about, is the adjustment between the parties. What if we're closing on August 1st and on July 1st, the seller paid for the next bunch of years? People don't realize, wait, I'm paying, and then I'm paying, and then I'm paying again. That's because the seller had paid, they got to be reimbursed.
Right. Yeah, there has to be an adjustment made.
There has to be between the parties. Any tax that's due and upcoming soon can't be a lien. Am I correct? I mean, otherwise there'd be an open, what is that number? If it's open taxes.
Yeah, delinquent tax, right.
That's a lien, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It has to be satisfied.
Yeah, technically the lien is as soon as the tax levying body puts out the tax bill. As soon as the tax levying body approves it in a legislative session, it becomes a lien on the property.
Hmm.
So interesting, it's not just when you get the tax bill. If you look in the top of the tax bill, it'll tell you what the warrant date is and the lien date. And that's when it technically becomes a lien.
So how can homeowners get away without paying property taxes?
unless they're legally holy,
unless
they're legally holy,
that's what our audience really wants to know. How can they get away with paying nothing on their home? Is that a way? I mean, is there a way? I know a firm, Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Is that possible?
Yeah, no, they went out of business.
Okay,
yeah, there is no way around the property tax.
You guys looked at me like, oh, is this guy nuts?
It is a good question though, because there are a lot of homeowners that have not paid property taxes for a number of years and have not been foreclosed on yet. Why is that? You know, how fast do they go after that?
Well, the law requires the municipality to go into an in rem proceeding.
What does in rem mean? Does that mean the thing?
It means against the property. Oh. It means it's like a foreclosure, but
Latin.
Against
I didn't
taxes.
Know you spoke Latin. That's I'm impressed.
Yep, thanks. That's about it too. So it's against the property. It's a tax, a property tax action, and
what kind of thing? I guess you get notice requirements like any foreclosure. And then they ultimately
you'll get multiple notices before.
So now, if the
happens,
homeowner's paying the taxes themselves, and this happens, typically the bank will pick up the tax payment just to protect the property, correct?
The bank will.
And then it would be the bank that would have to go after the homeowner.
So the mechanics would be like this. So each municipality will hire a title company to do a limited scope search, and they'll search out who the lien holders are. So they'll pick up that lender if it's a non-escrow loan.
Mm-hmm.
And then that lender, as a lien holder, will get noticed that there is delinquent taxes so that they can protect their interest in the property. So, you know, at that point, the bank can come in and pay the tax and either foreclose on a homeowner for violation of their contractual obligation or put them into an escrow program.
I think they notify them and say, look, the taxes were $2,400, so it's $200 a month more.
Right.
Get them on board.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hmm. Right.
And how long does that process typically take? I think that was really a question. How can I do this and get away with it? Because that is what has been happening with all of the foreclosures now, because there were so many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that again, with the banks, a bank to go out and look to see that taxes are paid, that's a different service. And typically, a good lender or a larger lender is going to be pretty on top of that,
because mm-hmm.
they could be holding a huge portfolio of loans that if they're not doing that, and they have several that are that are tax delinquent, then they'd have to make a real hard business decision whether they, whether they pay it
mm-hmm.
and protect their interest or let them go. And in different parts of the country with different values on homes, it could be a different decision in each area. Here, again, like we were talking before,
mm-hmm.
we have such tremendous value in our real estate, it typically behooves them to pay the tax before the county does. And again, what we talked about at one point before we went on the air was when the municipality does foreclose and the taxes on the property are $50,000, but the value of the property is $500,000, the municipality keeps that money, the excess money.
I'm sure the public thinks that that's a negative windfall, that really, yes, I might owe that tax, but I certainly have all this value which I've accrued since 1979. I mean, could you explain the rationale to a home buyer, maybe as a warning to say, look, if you don't pay that, you could lose that hard-fought-for equity? What's the rationale?
So all the lien holders in that in rem proceeding, all the lien holders are notified, and if they don't step forward to protect their interest, that once the deed is filed, the tax deed, that wipes them out.
Mm-hmm.
So now they might have had a couple $100,000 of interest, and they've been wiped out. And if the homeowner is allowed to take the excess over that $50,000, well, they just got away without paying those other lien holders.
Okay, what about I understand. So other lien holders like a lender, even judgment creditors.
Contractors.
Everybody, yeah, like a mechanics
lien. Anyone who has a lien on them.
Got it. So they get wiped out. So I understand. That makes sense to me. But what if there is no loan? What if the only lien is those, or the only lien?
The only lien is the tax.
Yes. Then why? I mean, you gave me a great answer. Why would I not just, if I'm the homeowner? Yes, I've been delinquent, derelict, and we had a terrible, recession and sickness and so on. I understand I pay my debt with penalties, but why would I lose the equity?
Yeah, those are terrible circumstances, and they do happen. One was in Long Island, where I think it was almost $500,000 that was what you would consider a windfall towards the county. And the philosophy is that with the lien enforcement activity, the expense of it is very high. And, to enforce the liens and reimburse the municipalities, they have to bond the money so that they have the money to give to the school or give to the municipality. Mm-hmm. And, in Westchester, it's the township that's reimbursing the county and the school. So they have to bond for that.
When you say bond, I'm sorry to interrupt, does it usually mean pay 10% for that bond?
No. It's
a surety bond.
If all the delinquent taxes in the municipality are $5 million, and they'll put a tax anticipation note of $5 million bond.
So it's an overall.
It's an overall. It's not a
right.
home by home.
And then
I
that way they have the money to make the other, the in this case the county and the school district whole, and they would recover that over time through the lien enforcement,
So the rationale is that they lose on some and they gain on others.
Exactly right.
And
that's a real disparate treatment, for different people. But that's interesting. Look, I mean, that's why I know that in mortgage loan underwriting programs or requirements, the taxes is such a big thing. It affects affordability so much. People. I know Tim lives in Greenwich, where they're far less. I know that the Bronx, our neighbor to the south, is so much less. Even in eastern Long Island, I know that's so much less because they don't have big police or sewers or lights or garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you get a lot more. Do we get some luxury services in Westchester? I don't know.
Well, it's just different services. Different than the boroughs.
Certainly, yeah.
Much different.
Sure.
We are talking about property tax. We have John Noto here as our guest, Scott Forsino as our co-host. And if you would like to join in on the conversation, please give us a call at 914-693-5700. Again, that's 914-693-5700.
Have you ever been disappointed because something important you planned went wrong at the last moment? Doesn't that make you really frustrated? That won't happen at Movement Mortgage, where your entire loan process is designed to remove the stress and hassles from getting your loan approved quickly. Movement Mortgage is an Inc. 500 fastest growing company in 42 states, including this area, working hard for you. How? At Movement Mortgage, your loan is processed in 7 days, and we underwrite in the first 48 hours. We expedite your loan and update you continually. When buying your first home, upgrading, downsizing, or even refinancing, call your Movement Mortgage team today. The movement of change is here for you with Movement Mortgage. Call Movement Mortgage at 1-800-516-2119. That's 1-800-516-2119. Movement Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS ID 39179.
The movement of change is here. Movement Mortgage.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138, or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
And we're back. And we have John Noto in the studio here at WFAS, and our call-in number is 914-693-5700, and I believe we have a caller on the phone right now. Tatha, can you hear me?
I can.
Do you have a question, or are you joining in on the discussion?
I'm just joining on the conversation. There was, I guess, some discussion about how long you can go before, you know, paying taxes and getting tax foreclosed on by the taxing authority. And, you know, for the consumers, there is no hard and fast rule, unfortunately. I'm in upstate New York, in Clifton Park, Schenectady County, Albany County, Saratoga County areas, and it really just depends on how well the town is doing and how well the market is doing in any particular town or city. If the resale is really good and the market's hot, and if it's a town like Clifton Park, they're going to foredo a start of tax foreclosure the first time you're delinquent. Whereas in a city like Schenectady, where there are literally hundreds of tax foreclosed properties, the towns have stopped doing tax foreclosures because they don't want to own the properties.
Right.
So it's an interesting phenomenon of, you know, because I have people ask me all the time, like, how long can I go? And again, there really is no general, the law states that they can foreclose after the first delinquency, but that doesn't mean they will.
Anecdotally, hi Tatha, Scott.
Hi.
I know municipalities, I won't mention them, that just do not do it. It's a city, and they just don't want to start doing, like you say. And I guess is in this instance, if a property is worth lots and lots of money, like $1 million or $2 million, and there's, you know, 250 or 300,000, they know they're going to get paid one day when someone dies or sells, so they are really not in a rush. Maybe they, in other cases, there's a trustee of a local or a local municipality who says they just don't want to do it.
Right. And they don't want to be in the business of owning property. So they just, like you said, they
I don't think the public knows that. Be dangerous if the public knew that. I'm not telling you.
What are your thoughts, John?
Well, you know, it depends on what the, in upstate, it's a lot of the counties are doing the lien enforcement, and in Schoharie or Schenectady, You know, they may still be operating under what's called Article 10, which is a different type of proceeding. Down here, we're Article 11. So it's by law, it's a 24-month foreclosure process with the option, the local option, of extending that. And what Rockland County did was they extended it to 36 months because they figured if they gave people an extra 12 months, it would help them recover if they had a hardship and so forth. But yeah, when they don't enforce the liens, as hard as it may be, it sets a precedence for the rest of that municipality to not pay, which can basically crumble a municipality.
That could be very dangerous.
Financially, absolutely. And it's why property taxes have such a onerous penalty program. Is there's interest, there's penalties. It's like getting caught up in a cyclone when you are late. And it's meant to be that way, unfortunately, to hold that anvil over your head to say you do need to pay it because that's how the municipality runs for the health, welfare, and safety of that area.
I want to ask Tath a question. Tath, in your transactions, have you seen either clients that prefer to pay their own taxes or do you see that banks... I think there's a disclosure within the loan package where they say they kind of caution the borrower that they are giving them a break by not requiring the escrow. Have you seen the incidents of those two things?
No, I'm seeing very few closings where the buyer has the option. I don't know if it's just because of the nature of the loans in this area, which with not a lot of money down, but they don't. Most borrowers do not have the choice. They're forced to escrow their taxes.
Right. Is that right?
No one has a choice. The bank always has the right. In instances where people said, whatever is their preference, maybe they own a pizza place or they get paid like salespeople, they don't have a regular biweekly paycheck, the bank has the right, and they let them know they're waiving that right in this instance. And there's, I even had a transaction once where a lawyer wanted, a document, I don't want to, he wanted a document that said the bank wasn't taking it, but they gave the document that says he was kind of asking for something in reverse. I don't remember, but the fact is the bank has the right and the people. I've even seen, Tath, if you've seen this, the interest rate be 0.25% worse based on a no escrow loan.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in the last couple of years, but that used to be pretty common where they would give them an interest rate break if they did escrow. Again, I think most banks are requiring, if you're not putting at least 20% down, they're requiring escrows, and we just don't see a lot of 20% down loans in this area anyway, VA, FHA, USDA. So it's not an option to not escrow. Ironically, I had a closing today where they were putting 20% down, and they had the option to not have escrow, but the buyer elected to have it. It did not change their rate, but they didn't want to have to worry about it, so they just chose to have the escrow.
Well, Tatha, wouldn't you advise that they do that anyway? Isn't
absolutely
that the safer choice?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I escrow myself when I don't, I have a loan ratio where I don't have to, but I just do it. It's just, I think in general, it's easier for people to just include it in their monthly payment and not have a big lump sum due, twice a year. And, we all know that if we set money aside for something, we usually end up spending it on something else with the idea that we're going to replenish it, and somehow it just never happens.
I don't do that.
No.
Hi.
Yeah, definitely not you.
So John brought up an interesting point. I want you to hear this, that although, yes, escrowing might be a good step in the ease and convenience of paying your taxes, what was your point? That you want to say that... I apologize. It flipped the burden where if the tax was not paid, funny, I just was spacing it. If the tax wasn't paid, what happens? Then you have a defense?
If it's an escrowed loan, the servicing company has the obligation to make that payment timely. And if they don't, then the interest and penalties is on them, not the homeowner. Homeowner's
absolutely
job is to pay the escrow. And it does make it a much, much more safer for the homeowner. And I've seen escrow companies try to push that back onto the taxpayer, and we fight back on them and say, pursuant to law, it's triple damages if you want to push this. And they usually pay it pretty quickly.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so it's a nice opportunity to get the easy and convenience and shift the burden, so you really have a clear head when it comes to this. You just got to write those 12 checks a year. That's it.
Right.
That's right.
And, you know, one question I want to ask John, which people always say, my taxes keep going up, my taxes keep going up. Why and what's reasonable? I mean, if you buy a house today, maybe not in Westchester, but in our general metro area, what's reasonable?
Or anywhere, for that matter.
Or anywhere. Okay, so Ohio. I mean, what? Why don't they stay the same?
It really depends on what's going on in their local market, and it's part of a buyer's responsibilities to see, you know, how is this government running? Are they conservative with the way they spend the money? Are they expanding services, which is going to increase the taxes? Is the school district performing? Are they hurting? We had a circumstance in Rockland County where Murat Power Plant filed a grievance. It lasted for 12 years. They went bankrupt. It cost all the municipalities involved $275 million to settle it. A Cape Cod house that was, say, 1,500 square feet was paying $3,000. The next year was paying $12,000.
Wow.
So you can imagine what that did to the values in that area and the people as well. But, you know, it's really something that it's that unknown that people buy into when they buy into a community is, how are they spending our money?
So let's talk about that. We know schools are definitely a big topic for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there needs to be a new school built or, you know, something going on with the school system, what else would happen that would change the taxes? Where else is the money going?
So a lot of it goes, we have big police departments that, like we have a 160-man police department in one town. They service the mall, one of the biggest malls in America. They have another mall that's big.
Mm-hmm.
Their manpower is stretched. Even with that, they do make, you know, a commensurate salary to all the other departments in the area. But, you know, when you look at those malls and those ratables, the sales tax that's being generated, which is what those townships would be hoping they would get, it goes to the county, and the town only gets a small piece of it. So while they're maintaining the security for these large ratables, they're not getting the benefit of the income that they're producing as commensurate as they should. So that is a burden on them. The unfunded mandates are a big one, and that comes from the state passing laws where the county needs to provide services, whether it's social services or what have you, and that becomes a local burden, a local tax, and eats up a big part of our property tax, which was always meant to be a local tax, but the state found a way to siphon off some of that up to the state.
I want to ask Victoria a question indirectly for the consumer. Victoria, with your insight with real estate brokers, real estate firms, even the business itself, John mentioned a point where the buyers, as part of their due diligence, should have an idea of what's going on in the house or even the community they buy. What role do realtors play in that? Can realtors just keep their head up in the sky and not know anything and keep the burden, or can they in any way facilitate? And do they facilitate? I mean, what's that role?
Well,
do they appreciate
should.
That role?
They absolutely should, and I know John will
they should.
Agree with
do they?
Me. Yeah, well, unfortunately, they do not always do that, but
okay.
They should, and that is one of the reasons why you really want to be very selective in who you're choosing to represent you as your realtor.
And that's something that you think we're talking to consumers, they should expect. Look, you know, I never bought a house, lived in an apartment, we saved up, first-time buyers, millennials.
Right.
Maybe it's not on the Google.com. I mean, can someone
else... Well, you mentioned something earlier where maybe it was a senior that lived there prior, you know, and now somebody like a millennial is coming in and they're looking at a different tax rate. Well, that realtor should know that, and they should be double-checking. They should be cross-referencing everything
and
that
they're
doing.
And we've heard many times where there's what I like to call like the old-fashioned sticker shock, where they're looking at it's one thing and it's clearly another, and the realtor is there. I mean, I think the realtor is, that's one of the steps, one of the check boxes to be made by a consumer to say, does my realtor know any possible tax consequences or the tax situation? I mean...
Right. Well, a good realtor, you know, someone who has a good reputation, someone who has experience, does know how to do that. You know, and again, that's the reason why you really want to be very selective in who you're choosing.
I agree. Have you come in contact with that issue at all, John, where the realtor gets involved and is really an appropriate conduit to the consumer?
I think not so much in them coming out and you know, watching what's going on with the municipality. But a good broker who, like you were saying, knows their market, knows the areas where they transact, and they know where the trends are in the spending of their governments and that they're representing. You know, they are the expert in that area, and they know, they should know all aspects.
Absolutely. And without even having to cross reference, you know, a good broker would know it, looking at the number and saying, well, that doesn't seem right. You know, there's probably a reason for that, and then they can go ahead and do it. But just like he said, it would stand out to someone who knows their market.
But you know, from the listing side, it's a pretty I would say very normal to expect the listing broker to get a good handle on that tax, right?
They absolutely should.
Disclosure and entry into MLS. But I think you'll agree with me that buyers do not hold their brokers to that standard.
Well, buyers are not familiar with what questions are really needed at that moment. And that's why, again, I'm just going to keep saying the same thing over and over again, and I don't mean to repeat myself, but it is really very important on who you select as
the broker to
represent you.
I think they really should say, because listen, look how much and look how long that consequence. When
absolutely.
You long forgot your realtor's name, you'll be paying increased taxes.
Yeah, and it goes even further than taxes. I mean, they should know the local market. They should know what's going on around them. You know, for instance, if there is going to be a new school that is in the works, you know, that buyer may not know anything about that, you know, but the local realtor should. You know, they should know what's going on in that community. Mm-hmm. And that there is talk of this.
That's
and that
fine.
Maybe there were permits already pulled for this. And that will affect the taxes later on.
Yeah. If nothing else, I think we've alerted consumers to be on the lookout for tax increases. And they always, I mean, this is, I know, one thing that lenders are really worried about. When they underwrite a loan, they want to make sure that they're not underwriting the buyer's capability of purchasing with enhanced star Ma and Pa Kettle, who are not paying anywhere near the appropriate amount.
Yeah, looking at just what you're saying on the infrastructure, you know, Orange County, New York was a bargain years ago. And then when everybody, the mass flooding of people moving up there, it was a bargain until they had to build new schools and new infrastructure and sewer districts.
Did that happen to you, Victoria?
Yes, it did.
And then the taxes go up, you know, commensurate.
But, of course, I was aware of it. I chose where I wanted to live because of the new school that was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was very familiar with the school district, and I knew exactly what was going on. But somebody else may not have been and could have been very, very surprised, you know, after moving in and then the tax change.
I bet you a lot of your neighbors were. I
mean, I'm sure they
Manhattan,
were.
Manhattan, paying a rent, no clue, no appreciation for that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like you said, with Orange County, it was even more than schools. You know, there's so many other things that were going on there with the growth explosion. I mean, for a while, Orange County was the fastest growing county in all of New York State.
Right.
All right.
That would make sense.
So before we end our show today, I just wanted to go over some myths and misunderstandings that you had mentioned. If there's anything that you want to talk about before we
Probably the big one that I've always gotten was, if I file a grievance on my taxes with the assessor, they're going to raise my taxes. And in New York, you can file as often as you want, no matter what you're assessed at, and the assessor cannot, under any circumstance, change your assessment. They cannot raise it. So you have no fear of filing your grievance, and it is something that you should look at least every year or every other year to see that you're fairly assessed without the fear of retribution from an assessor.
Thank you very much for that. That's good information. We want to thank you very much for being here today. You really gave us a lot of insight, a lot of valuable information. So, John Noto, how do we reach you if someone wants to get in touch with you?
You can email me at jnotojr@optonline.net. Happy to answer any questions that the listeners may have.
All right. Very good. And Scott, thank you for always being here and standing on your feet, as always.
I also want to thank John. I mean, I learned one or two things, and I tell you, I think he gave some really pertinent, relevant advice to the people, and they care so much about this issue, and I think this was a real thorough examination and treatment of taxes, and I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Scott, how do we reach you?
You can reach me at sforcino, F-O-R-C-I-N-O, at exitrealtygroup.com.
Awesome. And I am Victoria Rivadeneira, your host, and you can reach me at victoriariva.com. I want to thank you for joining us at the Real Estate Revolution. Every Monday, 6 p.m., we are live. And next week, we have Glenn coming, Glenn Asher from Kensington Vanguard, and he will talk to us about title and what title means.
Is an hour going to be enough?
I think so, having the two of you in the room. Thank you very much.
From the Entergy Studios, it's News Talk 1230.